Pensacola's first choice for morning news, traffic, sports, and talk. The Pensacola Morning News with Andrew McKay. News Radio 92.3 AM 1620. Good morning, Pensacola.
The world is a vampire. Sent to drain. Secret destroyers. Hold you up.
It is an honor to be here at Eglin Air Force Base today for this momentous and historic occasion, the official rollout and naming ceremony for the F-15EX. Undefeated in aerial combat, the F-15 Eagle epitomized air superiority in the minds of our adversaries, allies, and the American people for over 45 years. But it was not meant to fly forever. The F-15C and D fleets in their current state place us at great risk, with 75% of the fleet flying beyond its certified service life, and 10% grounded due to structural integrity issues.
This is Lieutenant General Duke Richardson talking yesterday at Eglin during a ceremony where the newest Eagle, the F-15EX, it's not quite right to say it's a next generation because it really isn't. Generations have to do with the entire technology surrounding a fighter development platform, like, you know, the Raptor F-22 was the fourth generation, the fifth generation, the F-35, and the ones that you have probably seen the most. I think I've got that right. I always seem to get this wrong, but the entire generation that you're most familiar with is like what the Blue Angels fly, with the F-18s, were the regular Hornets, the Legacy Hornets, now the Super Hornets, the F-14 Tomcat, like you saw in Top Gun, the F-15 that they're talking about here, that is what the Air National Guard flies. It's the Air Force's fighter. That's what you saw in like Iron Eagle, you know, for example. And just, you know, movie references always help people visualize stuff. So they're old. You know, these planes have been around for, 40 years? You know, they're older, even. They're very, very old. The platform's old. The physical airframes themselves are old, and they've been in use for a long time. They're either nearing or beyond the lifespan expected for them. And, of course, fighters, there's a lot of stress on that airframe. It's designed to be driven hard, of course, or flown hard, but it's still a lot of stress on that airframe, and so it's not like some other things like a propeller plane where you can, you know, you might be able to extend it longer. It's built to last longer because it doesn't go through those same G-forces that tend to, you know, rip things apart and create problems for the plane, but they're old. Well, now you have the F-35, and one of the challenges, of course, is the F-35 is really expensive. Also, it's, I would say, in a very, very sweeping description, not quite living up to expectations, in addition to being very expensive, and in addition to having its own kind of unexpected short lifespan maintenance kind of issues related to the engine and some others. So, it's just not showing up to be what everybody hoped it would be. Might have been naive to hope it in the first place. So there was this other look, you know, what else can we do? And one of the what else can we do answers was, let's take the F-15, something that we know, something that's amazing and good for what it was, and let's see if we can't adapt it to something that we could use now and in the future as, a get us over, as an alternate, as something that's not nearly as expensive as the F-35 and something that won't be quite as old as the legacy versions, the C and the D that are being used now. And let's see what we can do with it. So that's what they built. That's what Boeing built.
The most significant difference between the F-15EX and legacy F-15s lies in its open mission systems architecture, which enables the rapid insertion of the latest aircraft technologies. The F-15EX is equipped with a high-speed fiber optics avionics service bus to enable rapid, cost-effective integration of advanced avionics systems developed to the OMS standard.
So what does that mean for an average person? Here's how I understand it, okay? And even I'm no aviation expert, even though I love planes. But the way I understand it is they built it to be able to be adapted to developing technology and to be capable of being, you know, of accepting and being upgraded. You know, the old ones were kind of built with what was available at the time And this one was built more with the idea of, hey, we're way ahead of where we were technologically. I mean, think about where technology is today as opposed to 40 years ago. We're way ahead today. And what can we do with this basic airframe, the basic design that we know is extremely good? How can we repurpose, retool that so that it not only has the advantages of what it used to be, but it has the opportunity to grow as technology changes really rapidly, as opposed to being rather fixed based on the technology that was developed at the time? So it's a good concept, you know, to be able to do both. And of course, this is what the Air Force is counting on. These are going to go to the Air National Guard. There's 144 of them already ordered to replace current F-15Cs.
The Air Force will procure 144 F-15EX aircraft to recapitalize the F-15Cs, a fleet approaching the end of its service life.
And as Lieutenant General Mike Lowe, who is the director of the Air National Guard, says, the whole idea is to take all the Cs that are old and not exactly falling apart, but, I mean, kind of in that vicinity, just like the Navy's old Hornets. You know, they're old. Right. They're kind of falling apart and they're out of parts and they're just, you know, that's what happens with airframes, is to recapitalize them or replace them with new airframes, the F-35 or the F-15EX.
The Secretary of the Air Force has announced plans to recapitalize all Air National Guard F-15 C's and D's with either the F-35A or the F-15EX. The Air National Guard flies 93% of homeland defense missions. And along with the F-35A, the new F-15EX will help ensure that legacy for many decades to come.
And in fact, it's really common, if you've never noticed, but if you fly into a city that also has an Air National Guard wing, it's really common to see, for example, I know this is true at Lambert in St. Louis, and of course Boeing is there as well, but you would see, you know, you taxi in on the runway and you'd see all the civilian air stuff, and then over to the side you'd see, rows of F-15s, and you'd see them flying in the air too, flying, defense missions or just flying test missions. More in St. Louis, but still, this is a very, very common airframe that, again, you have seen before with the twin engine, the twin rear upright wings that are stabilizers that are vertical instead of angled like the F-18 Hornet is. So the one thing, though, that everybody has been wanting to know is, what's the name? People who love jets, they always want to know what we're going to be calling a thing. And, of course, you know, the official name is not always what the thing gets called in real life. The Super Hornet gets called the Rhino, for example. The Falcon gets called the Viper. That's kind of what happens. But this one, I don't know if this is going to stick or not. It's not the most creative solution, but it was the moment that everybody was waiting for as they dropped the big curtain on the one that's there's two of them over at Eglin right now that are going to be tested before they get deployed. That's kind of what Eglin's role in all this is to do the testing.
Ladies and gentlemen, it's my honor to introduce the F-15EX Eagle 2.
If you couldn't hear him over the music, it's the F-15EX Eagle 2. That's it. That's it. Like the F-35 is the Lightning 2. Okay. All right, we'll move on. 517 here on News Radio 92.3 and AM 1620. I'm Andrew McKay. Good morning, 520, News Radio 92.3 AM 1620. I'm Andrew McKay. It's Pensacola Morning News. A little bit of very, very light rain outside right now, at least here at the station at I-10 and I-110. But if you look at the map, it's kind of all over the place. So expect some rain this morning on your commute into work. Mark Jacobs is in the newsroom this morning with our headlines. Mark?
Good morning. At least five people dead after a mass shooting in South Carolina. County Sheriff Spokesman Trent Ferris in York County.
We have found the person we believe is responsible, and we are with them at this time. And that's all I can say about that suspect. This is a very tragic, tragic situation.
The sheriff's office tweeting last night that a local doctor, his wife, and their two grandchildren were killed in the shooting, along with a man who was working at the home. U.S. one step closer to getting troops out of Iraq. The U.S. and Iraqi governments agreeing to hold talks on developing a timeline for removing the 2,500 service members still there. First comic book where Superman appears. Now the most expensive comic ever sold. The 1938 book selling for $2.25 million at an online auction. That's quite a markup from the original price of 10 cents.
Yeah, it's
from a dime to 2.25 mil.
It's a little more. What is that? It's Action Comics what? What is that? I forget the number. That's a Superman debut, right?
Yes.
All right.
It's just insane. They pay that much money. They'll never read it, too.
Action Comics 38.
Never touch it, yeah.
Yeah.
1938.
Don't even look at it. Stop looking.
Stop looking.
Put it away.
Just take my money.
Put it in the box.
No,
somewhere.
See, what you got to do is you got to sell the NFT for the comic.
Oh, no. Let's not. Come on.
And if the non-fungible, oh, God, what does the T stand
for? The blockchain and all.
Stop it.
Yeah, whatever.
If the NFT, you can sell the NFT for like $3 million, and then you can read it.
That's true.
Because you're fine. Uh-huh. You know, it's no big deal. Because the NFT says that somebody else owns it, even though it's so confusing. All right, Mark, thanks so much for the update. 522 on News Radio 92.3 and AM 1620. Oh, we might have a comeback of sorts. You remember how there was this plan for San Francisco schools? They were going to rename all of the offending schools. And, you know, the schools that were named after Washington, Jefferson, Dianne Feinstein. No, I'm not kidding. Like, even schools like that. How are you alive and you have a school named after you, by the way? But okay, whatever. So they're going to rename all of these schools, and this is to prove that they're woke enough, right, to get rid of anybody who had any ties to racism, oppression, slavery, or anything else. So, you know, Dianne Feinstein is in this trouble because of her, you know, loose connection to the Confederate flag in City Hall when she was the mayor. Anyway, the 6-member school board has now voted, and they're going to keep the names intact until students return to in-person school on a full-time basis. I don't know what that has to do with it. Like, get it. I guess if you're going to cancel something, cancel it while people are away so they can't see. But they wish to avoid the distraction and wasteful expenditure of public funds and frivolous litigation that would likely follow from this. And so they're worried about this happening now while they're dealing with COVID, apparently. It does. They're still committed to doing it. They just, you know, go a little slower. It'll go a little slower. 523 on News Radio 92.3 and AM 1620. What else do we have? Oh, man. This is... I hate to mention this because it's the kind of thing that if you understand the significance, it'll just kind of make you want to drive off the road a little bit, and I hope that doesn't. But you know how we've been talking off and on about Washington, D.C. becoming a state? Yeah, that's coming. During, what is this now, next week? No, the week after that, I think. The House is going to vote on the possibility of making Washington, D.C. the 51st state April 19th, the week thereof. So Eleanor Holmes Norton, who represents D.C., she announced this yesterday. The House Oversight Committee is going to look at it on the 14th, and then they're going to send the legislation, assuming it passes, it will, to the full House vote, and then they're going to decide what to do. And we've talked about this a little bit on the show, that there is an injustice in the idea that the residents of Washington, D.C. pay taxes but do not have voting representation, right? That's a problem. It's not that the answer is make them a state. You know, that's not the solution, but there is a basic problem, you know, since kind of our country was built on the idea of no taxation without representation. So the 51st state, when it passes the House, and it will pass the House, is going to be called, you ready for this? It'll still be Washington, D.C., but the D.C. is not going to be the District of Columbia. The D.C. is going to be the Douglas Commonwealth for Frederick Douglass. So it'll be not Washington District of Columbia, but Washington Douglas Commonwealth.
Okay.
And before you weird out over that and say, well, that doesn't exactly roll off the tongue, neither does District of Columbia. I mean, the current name is pretty wonky, right? The state of Washington, D.C. I mean, it's not a state, but that's... So they're keeping the initials, and they're going to rename it for Frederick Douglass.
I'm totally cool with that. But here's my problem. The fact that we're going to have 51
mm-hmm.
states. I was all about the solid 50 states.
Oh, yeah. It's a good geometric simple number. It looks well on a flag, or looks right on a flag.
And now we have to squeeze in that additional one. It's like, oh, excuse me, I just got to work my way up in here. All right, now I'm in.
That to me is... I mean, the flag change, we've always changed the flag, and it's always annoying. The issue to me is, of course, what happens in the Senate. Because in the Senate, as currently structured, this would mean 102 members of the Senate, a very, very small place, Washington, D.C., would acquire two senators, and that would swing the Senate very strongly in the favor of a permanent Democrat majority. And that's the part that bothers me. Now, here's the good news. It takes 60 votes to advance in the Senate, and do they have 60 votes to advance in the Senate? I think the phrase you want is no way in hell under the current composition of the Senate. But you got to play the game. You got to actually run the contest and see what happens. So it's probably much ado about nothing at this point, but here we go. So, you know, we'll see. 520. By the way, the allegation, of course, against Georgia is that they changed their voting laws in order to reassert Republican dominance, discourage Democrat, especially black voting. That's the allegation. OK, the same exact allegation is certainly fair here, which is that Democrats are doing this not because of some high minded rooted principled approach to American politics, but because, oh man, we'd love to be able to control the Senate permanently. 527 News Radio 92.3 and AM 1620. I'm Andrew McKay. This is by far the best song off this album, too. That's a great song. Not Take On Me. Don't start with me, Davis. I know you're a big fan of Take On Me.
I played the song knowing you were going to make a comment and be like, oh, this one's the best song.
This is the best song.
Just so I could say, God, you're so wrong. But that's okay.
Oh, what format did you own this album in and listen to it 1,000 times when you were growing up?
Format? Album? iPod?
Oh, by the way, I know you're so happy today. What are you wearing today?
We're both happy today. Well, you see I'm wearing a green Masters shirt bought at Augusta, by the way. Mm-hmm. And also, if I were to lift up my pant leg, you will see I'm also wearing some Masters socks.
I think you need to stop lifting your pant leg right there. Okay, good. You got Masters socks. So, outstanding.
I'm excited because today's the first round of the Masters.
First pitch in the Masters is today. I just love mixing sports metaphors. Also today, opening day for a lot of teams, including the Cardinals. But, you know, basically this is the day where most of your teams that had their opening day away last week are having them. Not all of them. It's a weird schedule this year. But a lot of them are having opening day today. So I'm, of course, wearing a Cardinals jersey to make up for not wearing one last week, which I still feel bad about that. All right. Mark Jacobs, what do you have coming up in the news, sir?
So Davis, when is tip-off for the...
I don't know.
Kickoff at 11 a.m.
Around the time they drop the puck.
Yeah, right.
Yeah, there you go. Same thing.
I'm Jim Chesko with Your Money Now. Well, this could be interesting. Former Vice President Mike Pence has inked a two-book deal with Simon & Schuster, with the first of the two books to be his autobiography. The publisher promises it'll be the definitive book on one of the most consequential presidencies in American history. It's not expected until 2023, however. No financial terms were disclosed, but some reports indicate the two-book deal is likely in the range of $3 to $4 million. Something new from Best Buy at some 60 stores in 6 states, a test run of a $200 annual membership program, providing members with free device installations, a concierge service for tech support, free shipping for all orders, no minimum, and other perks. The Best Buy beta program looks to be a pseudo attempt to compete with Amazon, at least with technology lovers. Stocks didn't move a whole lot today, but the S&P 500 did manage a new fresh closing high with its meager 6-point advance. The Dow Industrials added 16 points. The NASDAQ Composite, though, eased 9. That's Your Money Now.
The heart is a blue. Welcome back. 537 on News Radio 92.3 AM 1620. I'm Andrew McKay. It's Pensacola Morning News. Nice weather out-ish. The temperature's good. The rain is not so good. Yesterday when you played that song, Davis, when we had Mayor Robinson on, it was a perfect, beautiful day. And I think I made the comment, oh, it is a really nice day out. And I think he did too. But this morning, it doesn't exactly fit so much. Mayor Robinson, welcome back to the Pensacola Morning News, sir.
It is a beautiful day. I'm standing out here looking out across the airport. It is a beautiful day. And one we need to be thankful for. So very happy. Just another day in paradise. So glad to go live it. And by the way, before we get started, I mean, now it's been corroborated by a second source at the Independent that
that potentially Andrew McKay for mayor. So that's what I'm hearing for 2022.
Yeah, you hear wrong. Unless you have plans to annex my neighborhood. By the way, you know, when you originally said that, I think I took it as a compliment. And then I started thinking about it a little bit more, and I'm like, so this is a job that you dislike so much you don't want to run for re-election, but there you are putting me up for it. Are you trying to tell me you don't like me very much? Is it?
My subconscious was telling me that I was going to see Andrew McKay that morning as I was trying to get my snooze sleep in, and you were on top of mine. I was like, Andrew McKay's going to run for mayor. All right, that sounds good.
Nope. Also, I think I'd be terrible at the job, so I'm not an administrator for sure. Let's talk about some of the things. Actually, there's kind of a cool thing coming up tomorrow night, and in my own inability to decipher some of the legal speak that goes into these city agendas, I hadn't realized this was on the agenda, but it's a second reading for the tiny homes ordinance, right?
That is correct. It's Regulation Q. It's going to allow us to build tiny homes. It's been done by the state. We had a chance to adopt it. The county adopted it probably in December, right before it came in. It came on the state books in the 1st of January. We were working a little bit through it, so we finally brought it in last in March. We approved it for the first hearing, and now it's for the second hearing. And we're hoping we're going to get some tiny homes built once that ordinance gets done. You know, again, we don't think tiny homes is going to be the only solution. But we believe the solution is going to have to be big enough on affordability that we look at everything. And we think tiny homes certainly have a place to play when we look at affordability in the city of Pensacola.
Do you anticipate that this will be single tiny homes on single small lots, or will this be like tiny home communities? And do you have any early idea of where people might expect to see these once they become legal?
I certainly think there's the potential. There's always been the potential with accelerated dwellings to do it. I think it would just accelerate some of that possibility. So it could happen, probably not standalone tiny homes, because that would kind of defeat the purpose and the cost of land. But I think you could see them pop up as accelerated dwelling units in large lot properties, probably more likely in the East and North Hill and you know, more traditional neighborhoods that have larger lot size, even probably East Pensacola Heights might have one of these. Where I think you'll see more of the second option you talked about, where we have commercially zoned, which allow for a little bit higher density. The challenges of most of our density units that are residential neighborhoods aren't going to allow you to create more than a couple of spots. So I think it's going to be some of those commercial areas that also can, since the zoning is cumulative, they can come in with probably, you know, 25 units an acre, so a half acre, you can do 12. I think that is likely to happen, a little bit of both. We've identified a number of spots that could take both, and there is a large portion of the city, like I said, more in the older sections than the commercial sections that have an open area for it. But you know, I think it's really going to depend on seeing how the first ones get done and how they're received. But I do believe there's absolutely a possibility, and we'll see what happens as we go forward.
All right, very good. You know, one of the things I've been kind of meaning to ask you about this for a little while now, and I guess, you know, I've got a moment at the right now. It seems like we're seeing a lot of property demolition going on around, even in the city and even sometimes like right on the periphery of the city. I'm thinking about that that lot on the southeast corner of Tippin and Creighton that went away recently. I'm thinking about the airport and Davis intersection, the southwest corner there. That stuff all went away. I was just driving up over there on Garden at the old school property off Spring Street. That's all been taken away. I mean, that's been away for a little while, but that's all cleared. It seems like we're seeing more clearing and demolition going on. Is this a trend? Is this something the city is advocating for? What do you make of that? You're in real estate.
Well,
what do you make of this?
I make of it as individual property owners are seeing the opportunity for the land values to exceed what was on the property before in time for reuse, which is always a good thing. I mean, you're going to hit moments of reuse, and until it becomes economically viable to do so, I think what you're seeing is you know, a number of things that happened with property prices. I do think that's anticipating something going forward. Some of those properties would be perfect for multifamily residential. Some of them will be perfect for new commercial development. It really depends on the part, but I think much of what you're seeing that for is simply that's an explanation of the price of land. And that the price of land has gone up, that the old use is no longer even it's worth taking it down and just starting it over because the value of the land is that valuable.
Where are we at, by the way, on that spring and garden development? I know it had been kind of on pause to see if we can get a better design that would fit everybody's interest, but where are we at on that?
I think there are some people that are continuing to look at that. I think there are multifamily, there may be multifamily developers that decide it's easier to go work on a piece of private property than it is with the government. I think things will happen. I think the biggest thing is getting to the market first. I think that was a big part of why Silver Hills left with us. I think two things. One, the original deal we brought to the city was a really good deal for us.
By the way, for people who aren't familiar, the Silver Hills deal was for that lots 4 and 5 on the Community Maritime Park that would have been multifamily mixed use, including a parking garage.
Correct.
Go ahead. Just for people who don't know.
Correct.
Go ahead.
And I think as they looked at that, the other thing was they wanted to move fast to get to market because they believe that is going to be the first person that gets their multifamily up that will do the best.
Yeah.
There are multiple, we've been talking, I've had people come in off private properties. They just come in and talk to me about stuff. So we have seen a number of potential development sites that are private property in the downtown area. Something is going to happen in the very near future. I think we're going to see somebody file a permit and go. Is it that one? Is it another one? I can't really, that'll depend on sort of what happens with the market, but there is a buzz about somebody coming out of the ground with something. And I think much as Silver Hills' issue was, they just did not feel like moving with the city was going to move fast enough to what they do.
It's definitely been a long time coming, long predating even me being here in Pensacola. We're talking to Mayor Grover Robinson. I know typically when it comes to preemption by the state, you're against it as a local official. You'd like to have local control. I did want to ask your opinion, though, because the governor recently did a preemption that didn't really get talked about in that way when he prohibited businesses or governmental organizations from requiring vaccine passports or proof of vaccination for use of services or access to businesses. As a preemption, is this one that you're okay with? Did you have any intention of, having anything like that in the city of Pensacola?
We were certainly not doing that. That was not something we were thinking about in Pensacola. Were other places doing that? I have no idea. That's why he has a huge amount of property and people to look at. So, I don't think Pensacola wasn't what was causing that to look. That was not something we were going to be doing.
All right, very good. So that's not one that bothered you, which it didn't bother me either. I had kind of almost had to catch myself after the fact saying, oh, that's a preemption. I hadn't caught it. Speaking of the port preemption bill, did we wind up getting taken off the list? Is that still affecting us?
Yes, we wound up getting out of it as good as we could get out of it. It's now the preemption is fairly well only attached to dealing with cruise ships. So if a cruise ship wants to come to Pensacola, we can't block it. Listen, throw us in that one. We'd love a cruise ship to come here. So, I don't think that was something we were ever gonna preempt. Obviously, that was what was happening in Key West, which is what started this whole process. But for the most part, two things I want to say about that. I really want to thank Michelle Salzman and J.R. Williamson. They stepped up in saying, taking some votes against where their leadership was to simply say, hey, you got to help Port of Pensacola get out of this bill because it's not intended for them. They shouldn't be wrapped up in it. And so really appreciate what they did in that process. Very good thing all the way around. In their committees, they helped us. My understanding from Amy Miller, also want to give a huge thank you to her. She's been over there working diligently on this. And my understanding is, We've gotten carved out about as good as we can go, and it's only related to cruise ships. So from our standpoint, we would love a cruise ship to come here. So we have no further issue one way or the other with what's out there and what's being proposed.
All right. Very good. Mayor Grover Robinson joins us every single Wednesday at about this time. Mr. Mayor, we look forward to talking to you again Monday at the press conference. Don't have any more dreams about me, if you please, especially not putting me into elected office.
Hey, if you're running, I think the other part that calls that is Dave Hoskin called me. I was like, hey, Dave, we could get Andrew to run for mayor.
For those who don't know, Dave is our owner, and I can understand that. On your brain, especially with Candy leaving Cat Country, leaving the air duties there, so I appreciate that. Mayor, we'll talk to you next week. Thanks so much for the time.
You take care.
You bet. 549 is Radio 92.3 and AM 1620. I'm Andrew McKay. Morning, 5:50 on News Radio 92.3 and AM 1620. I'm looking at my radar, and the News Radio ThreatNet radar has suddenly gotten a little bit more interesting, not in a good way. Whether when I don't mention it, that's when it's the way it should be, right? So we've got this storm that stretches all the way up to Birmingham and comes south by southwest all right over us and then goes across Mobile and over to New Orleans. At first, it was just looking like it was going to be rain and maybe a little bit of severe weather heading our way, kind of the orange and red on the map. Now we're seeing lightning show up heavily on this band that is stretching from basically the border of Mississippi and Alabama on the coast down to New Orleans. That is going to pass right near or right over us over the next couple of hours. Maybe, I'm guessing, like 2 hours from now, it's going to really start the worst part of it. So just be aware that this morning the weather's going to be a little bit rough. Take whatever appropriate steps you need in order to mitigate that, or to take a little extra time when you're driving into work. Just be prepared. This is not the day to show up without some rain gear or something. Mark Jacobs in the newsroom this morning with our headlines. Mark.
Two small children among five victims of a mass shooting in South Carolina found in a home along with their grandparents, a prominent doctor and his wife, a worker found outside. Police say they caught the suspect after an eight-hour manhunt. Search is on for a missing person after a paint factory exploded overnight in Ohio. At least 8 workers in the hospital, 2 trapped inside, had to be rescued, are in critical condition. Crews still on the scene fighting those flames at this hour. And Apple delaying production of some MacBooks and iPads. Chip shortages causing work to slow down. Sources say Apple is pushing back part of component orders from the 2 devices from the first half of this year to the second half of the year.
So I don't know where we at with laptops. At one time, there was a shortage.
Mm-hmm.
They were hard to acquire. And I always thought the reason was all these people trying to work from home, and there was a sudden surge in orders, just like bicycles, right? And that was the issue. But I thought there was also, as you kind of mentioned there, some supply chain questions with some of the elements there. Not necessarily just that we had exceeded capacity, but that there were actually some constraints limiting some of those places.
My understanding, at least a few months ago anyway, was that some of the places where they were making these things overseas had COVID restrictions that were closed or whatever.
Exactly, right. They either had outbreaks in factories or they had restrictions on workplace operations that were affecting our ability to get the building block parts that wound up in the end.
So this could still be part of that
situation. What I just wonder kind of what is the exact shape of the issue? What's causing the problem? Also, just kind of an interesting note, I saw a presentation that Dr. Barber, the superintendent for Santa Rosa County Schools, made the other day, and I kind of knew this, but I'm still kind of surprised by it. Santa Rosa County, most of the students are in school. Like 90% are in school, 10% are doing home learning. They still don't have not every kid has their own device still. Even the year into the pandemic. I mean, I know Escambia was ahead on this, getting everybody Chromebooks a couple years ago, and Santa Rosa was behind on this. It's maybe not as necessary if they're all in school, but I just don't know why not every kid has a device. It's just weird to me to think because, living in Escambia County, my kids going to Escambia school. Well, 2 of them went to middle school. It's just so common. So it's just kind of weird to think about that. But, I mean, they're working towards fixing it, to getting every kid having their own device. But maybe that's part of the issue, too, is acquisition these days. Mark, thanks so much for the update. 5:54 here on News Radio 92.3 and AM 1620. The AstraZeneca vaccine, what to say? So this is the one that's been, you've seen reports in the news, various kinds of issues. Now, if you ask me my layman's interpretation of the overall end of the road, is it a take or don't take vaccine? I still think it's a take vaccine. But it's like the one that comes with kind of the asterisks of the sort that there's, you know, some very rare, I mean, extremely rare connection with possibly blood clotting issues. They've had some issues with not releasing all the accurate data on their phase 3 clinical and then having to kind of revise that. And they've had to pause a couple of times over concerns about this blood clotting thing. And, you know, for example, in the UK, they're now advising limiting the AstraZeneca vaccine to under 30s. And the reason there is, and it's more women that seem to be affected by this, by the way. It's still, again, very, very rare. And the advisory bodies are very quick to point out that the risk to your health of getting COVID-19 is much greater than the risk to your health of getting this particular vaccine. But I think in general, it's one of those things where you might well say, you know, and this one is not approved yet in the U.S. It does not have an EUA in the United States. People might say, well, you know, look, we've got three good ones. And can I just get one of the good ones? You know, can I get one of the ones that doesn't have any of these questions surrounding it? And that's fair. I mean, the issue with the AstraZeneca one is that it's easier to store and it's cheaper to produce. And they've already put out, I think the number is 200 million of these have already been put into people's arms around the world. It's much more popular in, lesser developed nations and things and in Europe. Anyway, so that's kind of what's going on with the AstraZeneca vaccine that is, again, still not yet given an emergency use authorization for here in the United States. We still just have the Pfizer, the Moderna, and the Johnson & Johnson. 5:56 on News Radio 92.3 and AM 1620. Oh, also, just a side note, in the category of, remember how I'm always telling you about other places in the U.S. where they still, it's crazy what they're living with in terms of lockdown. Los Angeles County elementary schools are getting ready to expand school access 3 hours a day for elementary schools. No transportation provided to a separate daycare facility as they go like morning and afternoon kind of classing. So that's where they're at in L.A. Just so you remember, some of your fellow Americans who still can't even send their kids to school yet. 5:56, I'm Andrew McKay. Davis, it looks like, I guess maybe I was a little closer to right than you were, but neither of us quite got it right on the Wahoos yesterday, right? The capacity?
Yeah.
They're basically 100%.
Basically.
Except they're going to take out some of the rows in order to create a physical barrier between the crowd and the players, right?
Yeah. I mean, if you just imagine those seats were never there to begin with, it's 100%.
Yeah, it's really a 100% rule as long as they're, you know, masking, social distancing, except when you're eating or drinking. But trying to do a lot of stuff where you order from your seat, you know, instead of going up to the concession stand area. And, you know, they're trying to open it 100%. And I don't see any reason at this point why that won't work just fine. So
no, I think it'll be I really do think it'll be fine, and then it's a month-by-month case, so right. We'll see.
And then you got to, obviously, the whole point is to protect the players, you know, because if the players are getting COVID, then there's no baseball, right? So we'll be back in just a minute. Stick around.